You're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM. Coming up next, Radio Free Aaron.
Special Criminal Court of Michael McKevitt, the alleged leader of the Real IRA. McKevitt, who's 53 and from Beach Park, Black Rock in Dundalk, is the first man to be charged in the Republic with directing terrorism. The offence was introduced under legislation brought in after the Oma bombing in 1998. If convicted, McKevitt could face life imprisonment. Well, we're joined now by our crime correspondent, Paul Reynolds. Paul, there were some preliminary issues raised before the case got underway. Can you tell us about those?
That's correct, Eileen. David Rupert is the main prosecution witness against Michael McKevitt. We're told he infiltrated the Real IRA and was very close to McKevitt for British and US security agencies. We heard this morning, first of all, that David Rupert is not likely to appear in court to give evidence until next Monday at the earliest. We also heard that he's now writing a book with two journalists, and Michael McKevitt's defence team is quite concerned about this because they say they want to see whatever version or versions of events David Rupert tells those journalists before it's published. They want to know because it may be relevant to the case. They also were concerned about journalists in general. In the Special Criminal Court, journalists sit in two benches behind legal counsel, and he said he was concerned that if those two journalists that David Rupert is talking to were in court, well then that they may be able to look into defence counsel's papers and into their laptop machines, and he didn't want that. So he asked that the journalists be moved out of that area of the court, which the court agreed to. He also asked that Michael McKevitt be taken down from the dock in the court and be allowed to sit behind his counsel so that he can hear the proceedings and that he can also consult quickly with them, and the court granted him that as well.
Now, I understand Michael McKevitt is facing two charges and his defence is requesting that there be two separate trials.
Yeah, they asked this morning that the count of membership of the Real IRA, which is one charge, be dealt with at one trial, and the count of directing terrorism. Michael McKevitt is the first person in the history of the state to be charged with directing terrorism, and he could face life imprisonment. They want that to be treated as a separate trial as well, because they say there's different rules of evidence for each particular charge. But George Birmingham, who's the prosecution counsel, stood up and said that both cases are both charges are inextricably linked. He says you can't be the director of an organisation directing terrorism unless you're a member of the organisation. So there's a link between them. He says in effect you can't be a chief unless you've first been an Indian.
I know. When are we getting a decision on that?
We expect the decision sometime after a 2:15 this afternoon, and then pending no further legal argument, we expect Michael McKevitt will be arraigned and the trial proper will begin.
Okay, Paul.
In
The three-judge non-jury special criminal court sat for just over an hour this morning and had heard evidence from Detective Garda Chief Superintendent Peter Maguire. Now, he gave evidence about the circumstances surrounding Michael McKevitt's arrest. He said that after having read 40 pages of documents and statements from David Rupert, the MI5 and FBI agent, he decided to arrest Michael McKevitt as part of his ongoing investigation into dissident Republican activity. The 53-year-old County Louth man was then charged and brought to Budbriggan Garda Station. Now, at that point in the court this morning, Michael McKevitt's lawyers had the chance to cross-examine Detective Chief Superintendent Maguire. They decided not to do so, but reserved their right to do so later, and so the presiding judge had no option but to adjourn the case until Monday morning, when David Rupert is due to start giving evidence.
Shane, the case drew huge media interest yesterday. Was there the same interest today?
Well, Karen, I'd have to say that there were fewer journalists and indeed fewer members of the public there today. But that's all expected to change on Monday when David Rupert, the FBI and MI5 agent, is due to start giving evidence. His credibility is central to the case. If the judges decide that he's credible, then it's quite likely that there will be a guilty verdict. If they decide that he's not credible, then the chances are that Michael McKay...
An FBI agent who infiltrated the IRA has begun giving evidence as the main prosecution witness at the trial of Michael McKevitt, the alleged leader of the real IRA. 51-year-old David Rupert said he became an FBI agent because of his moral teachings. He told the Special Criminal Court that he mixed with prominent Republicans in Ireland and passed on information on their activities because the FBI paid for his trips and expenses. McKevitt denies being a member of an illegal organization and of directing terrorism.
Tight security and the emergency response unit vans with the blacked out windows mark the arrival at the Special Criminal Court today of the protected witness David Rupert. The 51-year-old from New York began his testimony in the trial of Michael McKevitt, the alleged real IRA leader who denies being a member of an illegal organization and directing terrorism. 6'5" and over 22 stone, David Rupert left school at 16 and married four times. He worked in construction, insurance and logging before becoming a successful freight operator with 39 trucks and 110 trailers. But bad investments in bars, restaurants and clothes shops damaged his business. And when one of his trucks crashed in Kentucky in December of 1992, killing three children, the operation collapsed. Rupert told the court he was in Ireland at the time and had been mixing with prominent Republicans Joe O'Neill and Vincent Murray at their bars in Sligo and Leitrim. When the Garda Special Branch photographed him and alerted the FBI, an agent called to his office in the US and asked him to work for them.
David Rupert also told the court why he first became an FBI agent. From my moral teachings, I found it morally acceptable to do, he said. I liked coming here and he was offering to expense my trips. He also said that even though he was infiltrating the IRA, he found Ireland relaxing. I would come here to unwind. It was like going back 40 years and going home.
Relatives of the victims of the Yoma bombing were also in court to hear David Rupert say he first became involved with Republicans when he started seeing the Florida state lobbyist for NORAD, Linda Vaughan. She addressed a hunger strike commemoration in Ireland, and when they were here together, they talked Republican politics and drank in IRA bars. Rupert's testimony continues tomorrow. Paul Reynolds, Ort.
Well, no prizes out there if you know what we're going to be covering today. And we're going to be talking about FBI informants. We're not talking about Sammy the Bull Gravano. We're talking about David Rupert, who's currently in Dublin testifying. What's going on now in Dublin is a show trial. It would not be shown here on Comedy Central, court television. Even the Sci-Fi Channel would not cover what's going on in Dublin, where you have three wigged judges, no juries, and everyone that gets into the box goes, yes, my lord, no, my lord. We'll be covering that today with, if we get everyone lined up, David McSweeney, who's now a correspondent for WBAI, who has been writing and sending what's going on in the court to www.mckevittrial.com. Now, that's mckevittrial.com. So if you want to get the latest from a WBAI point of view, go to mckevittrial.com. Then we'll be speaking with Cody McCone. He works out of O'Dwyer and Bernstein. He was a lawyer for the Brown Law Society. He went over as an observer to the trial. He's back in Brooklyn. He'll be calling in a little later. We're going to have Chris Fogarty from Chicago. He's covering it for a newspaper in Chicago. And he'll be giving us an American point of view in there. And also, a name that you heard in some of those RTE BBC reports, Joe O'Neill, who's been been a frequent guest on this show for Republican Sinn Féin out of Bundoran County, Donegal. If you were following the case in the past week or two, you would swear that Joe O'Neill was on trial and also Mickey Donnelly from Derry were on trial, that it really wasn't Michael McKevitt that was on trial. So we'll be doing a lot of coverage. And then at the end of the show, we'll be speaking with Anthony McIntyre, who was the guest of the Queen for 18 years in Long Cash, and Patrick Farrelly, former editor of the Irish Voice newspaper. And we'll be talking about censorship at the Andersontown News, at the Irish Echo, at the Irish Voice, and just censorship just in general, if you don't agree with what's going on with this so-called peace process. We're going to be concentrating for the next 45 minutes about an FBI informant who joined the Irish Freedom Committee here in New York, Chicago, and Boston. It was a national organization, tried corrupting it. It was a legal political organization. He tried to introduce things into it to make it illegal, whereby I was instructed by members here in New York to throw him out along with the people in Chicago and Boston. And I think it was a very good thing. And so many emails, because yours truly came up in the court case during the week, and he was talking about how what a pain in the ass I was to him at meetings here in New York, and about how in one particular meeting I had with him that I wouldn't go along with his plan. Which, thank God. Here's one email from David Rupert to a member here in New York. Chicago's made a commitment to support the Irish Republican Welfare Association. As I am told, Boston is on the same wavelength with Chicago, and so are some of the members in New York. John McDonough and his crew, namely Costello, insist that the money raised in Chicago belongs to them. Somehow they made a rule that all money needed to come to New York and be distributed from there. Now, he is right about that in the email. I sent Mike Costello out to Chicago to get money that was raised there for the families of political prisoners. He told Mike Costello, no, he was going to deal with the money as he saw fit, and it's coming out in the case that he might have given it over for illegal means on behalf of the FBI.
And John, was that what the money was raised for?
No, the money was raised by hardworking people in Chicago for the families of Irish political prisoners, but once again, the FBI had their agent maybe use it for illegal purposes, and because of that, the Bush administration has now made illegal the Irish Republican Welfare Association, that they are not allowed to raise funds here in New York. And here's what good old David thought about, about Radio Free Erin. He wasn't too happy about this show either. As for John McDonough, in any case, he would not have much to talk about since he is supporting a group in Ireland that's called the Geriatric Brigade. I doubt if it were not for his radio station program, he would have any clout at all. If he were so much even to cross line one in maligning our cause, we would have his station's owner in court with a blink of an eye, which would rapidly bring an end to him. I'm sure he knows that. That's why he is of little threat. Hope to talk to you later.
He doesn't know very much about WBAI.
Well, not only that, but it just shows he's speaking really as an FBI agent to someone saying that he was going to deal with us here at Radio Free Erin. And here's another one that he was taking a liking to Irish Northern Aid. I like your letter. I agree with your membership cards with no dues. Dues seem to give people in the Republican community a toehold to argue that they're lining their pockets. Down the road, maybe. But this time, just get it in a database. Get them coming our way. I would like to see that. If you can get a copy of Irish Northern Aid's database, I would fully support a frontal attack on their people. So the FBI were working, trying to get the names and addresses of all the people that are in the Irish Republican movement throughout the country. And then here's another one, which is not too bad. Chicago is going to withdraw from the national organization and operate its own Irish Freedom Committee in Chicago. I tried to meet with John McDonough while I was in New York, but he ignored my two emails and two voicemails. That was a good day to be out. If you want to see more of the emails, we have them posted on irishfreedom.net. That's one word, irishfreedom.net. Now, before I was coming into the studio, I get a call from a friend of ours, an activist, Mary Kelly, who put an axe to a military plane in Shannon. She goes on trial on Monday, and I say, Mary, I got to deal with one trial at a time. But she just told me coming over this week for her trial is Ramsey Clark, Scott Ritter, and Dennis Hallahan. Holliday, Dennis Holliday. That's right. You've heard on Democracy Now! Quite often. So Mary Kelly thinks her trial will be over by Tuesday. So we will have Mary, our own activist, will be on Radio Free Erin. Also, there's currently a prison protest going on at Macaberry Prison. Some prisoners have got up on the roof and demanding segregation from loyalist prisoners, and loyalists demanding it from Republican prisoners. Also, I want to say out a happy birthday to Bob Fast, who I understand had a great show during the week. He turned the big 7-0, but he still has a great radio show every Thursday night starting at 12 o'clock and p.m. And next
midnight.
Week.
That's in 12 midnight.
Yes. And hopefully next week I'll be doing Al's show. I'll be doing Taxi Talk. I'm having a couple of taxi drivers up here, and we're going to chew the fat here at WBAI for an hour and a half and maybe take phone calls about from you civilian passengers out there, and we'll get our gripes aired. And also get the Daily News and the New York Post tomorrow. They're doing feature articles on David Rupert and possibly this radio show who they're tuning into right now. And with us we have also Chris Duggan. He's with the Irish Freedom Committee, but he wanted to send a shout-out to a listener up in Sing Sing.
Yes, I had the honor of meeting with Mr. William Lee and up in Sing Sing. He's a guest of the New York criminal and justice system. And I just want to say that your indelible courage and your ability to adapt and overcome your unfortunate situation is truly inspiring. And thanks for meeting with me and corresponding with me. And also he says hello to his mother and his family.
All right. And you're listening to Radio Free Erin, and it seems to be we'll be talking about a lot of trials and tribulations today. And if you want to get up to date, when we're going to play a song here, we'll come back. We're going to speak to Dave McSweeney, who's the correspondent for WBAI at the trial in Dublin of an American FBI agent named David Rupert. And you go to www.mckevittrial.com. That's mckevittrial.com, or go to irishfreedomcommittee.net and you'll be able to click back and forth to your heart's delight. You can see some of our own Brian Moore's cartoons on David Rupert. He did them a couple of years ago, but they seem to be very relevant because during the week, the Irish Freedom Committee, Mickey McKevitt, Joe O'Neill, Mickey Donnelly, we're all connected to Muammar Gaddafi, Saddam Hussein, the USS Cole bombing, planes blowing up, and everything else that was in the headlines, Dave Rupert seemed to draw a connection to.
I'm surprised, John, that there were no arms coming from Afghanistan.
No, but there were arms coming from America that came up. So,
John,
you know,
on that website, are you having daily updates?
Yeah, there's daily updates
of the trial. So
all
at night you can go on to it, and they'll tell you what happened during the day at the trial.
Yes, and all the newspaper articles, some of the audio that you heard is up on it. Today's show will be up on it later on, so you'll be able to hear the interviews of David McSweeney, Cody McCone, Joe O'Neill, Chris Fogarty. But right now, a little music, and we'll talk to somebody that was in the court and covering it for WBAI. Welcome back to Radio Free Erin. During the week, an FBI informant testifying in Dublin. It's really a military court. It's a show trial, what's going on there. As I said, it wouldn't even get on Comedy Central or the Sci-Fi Channel. But a quote that almost all the newspapers missed, but which you will see on www.mckevittrial.com. Quote, "I am a whore who would work for anyone who would pay him." And that is a quote from the FBI informant, David Rupert. And with us on the line is the WBAI's correspondent, David McSweeney, who's been down at the case, or at the trial down in Dublin, a special criminal court. where the only witness, David Rupert, is trying to put Michael McKevitt behind bars for life because he's been charged with directing terrorism and it carries a life sentence. David, are you there?
Hello. How are you?
Good, oh, David.
Good.
So this is the OJ trial now that's going on in Dublin. What is your take on some of the stuff that's going on?
It's bizarre, John, to be honest. It really is. It's verging on the comical at stages. I heard one journalist who would be a rapidly anti-Republican actually describe it as a circus outside the court. So I think that probably gives you some indication of what's going on with Mr. Rupert's evidence. It really is shocking, in fact. You know, I think what's important to bear in mind the whole time here, John, is that this charge of directing terrorism, it carries a life sentence. So while, you know, there's literally been people, you know, journalists laughing out loud in the public gallery, it's a serious, very direly serious matter, obviously, for the McKevitt family, you know. I think we should bear that in mind.
Well, what seems to be coming out, and I understand the FBI are doing a lot of directing of what's going on, is that they have a running theme through each testimonial day of David Rupert. One day it was assassination of Tony Blair, the blowing up of the USS Cole, a teddy bear stuffed with Simtex that would be on a plane that he morally just couldn't do. And the press just run with that. Maybe you can describe some of the things that the press is covering in this.
Yeah, I suppose an example of it, John, would be the first day the prosecution was literally schooling Rupert through his evidence, and suddenly out of the blue and completely out of context, the prosecution counsel, George Birmingham, said, "Mr. Rupert is a very brave and courageous man." He said that and then continued on with his questioning, and it was so obvious that this was a soundbite for the media for that evening's news and the following day's newspapers, and sure enough, they all ran with it, you know, and it's been a theme that has come up, you know. There's been soundbites thrown out that, you know, the media would pick up on, and then that kind of, the legalities are the actual substance of what's been said is not being covered, and these kind of, you know, soundbites are being thrown out there as a, you could say, as a smokescreen, you know.
And David, one of the articles I read, it said, I think it was back in 1999, MI5 handlers had to give David Rupert hypnosis when he was in London to jog his memory.
Yeah, that is true, John. And if I could just give you an example of some of the testimony Mr. Rupert has been giving. This is in relation to when the FBI approached him at first. Now, I think anyone will believe that if a group like the FBI approaches you, you remember it, you know. Well, this is what Rupert said. When asked when the FBI first approached him, and I quote, he said he was not sure. He was then asked who made the second call or the follow-up call to this initial contact. He said he could not recall that either. He was then asked when did he actually decide that he would become an agent for the FBI. And again, I quote, I can't tell you exactly for sure. So Mr. Rupert isn't sure when they approached him. He isn't sure when they followed up, and he's not sure when he agreed. You know, that's a taste of some of the testimony.
Well, David, his memory got a little bit better because I read in the Irish Times, they said, but after an FBI agent, now they were urging him to testify against Michael McKevitt, and let's be clear, it also came out during trial, David Rupert worked for the FBI in New Jersey in 1975 on drug deals. Later on in his history, his brother Dale was smuggling reefer from Texas to Florida in a tractor trailer, was caught in Florida. Normally that would be a hanging sentence, but because of David Rupert was involved, allegedly, he got a 2-year sentence. But here's what the Irish Times said. But after the FBI urged him to sleep on his decision, because Rupert couldn't really decide if he wanted to testify, that night on TV, as I was randomly switching the channels, there happened to be a special on OMA that featured a young lady blinded by the OMA bomb and a young boy who apparently lost his shoulder bone. I thought it was amazing that was happening to me at this time. It was such a random choice of channels that it would be impossible that it was routed it to me, so I chose to testify. He contacted the FBI, which had earlier, his earlier salary had been raised from $2,500 a month to $4,500 a month. They then increased it to $12,000 a month. That's just an amazing thing that a documentary was on. He said, now I have to do it.
Yeah, well, in court, John, you know, in relation to that, again, this is his own, this is the prosecution counsel, told the court that the two issues that caused Mr. Rupert most concern when asked to testify were, firstly, his remuneration, how much he would be paid, and secondly, security for both him and his family. So, I mean, OMA didn't come into consideration then. But subsequently, when asked, he said that it was, that this documentary was the motivating force. But I mean, the prosecution had already stated that his two main concerns were what he would be paid and that he would be, you know, he would have security for the rest of his life. But I think your quote that you at the beginning of the program really it gets to the core of the issue. He said, and I quote again what you said: "I am a whore. I will work for anyone who will pay me."
And also,
kind of incredible.
If you go to www.mckevittrial.com, that's mckevittrial.com, you'll see some of the stories that have been written, and I'm telling you, bizarre stories. And you'll see some of the transcript of the trial. Now, here is just a four-line thing. Now, McKevitt allegedly was the head of some terrorist organization, and he said he attended meetings. This has come out in the newspapers. Now, this is what was said in court. Birmingham. What transpired during your meetings with members of the Real IRA Army Council in February of 2000? Rupert. I can't actually recall anything of significance. Birmingham. Can you recall anything of interest that was discussed at these meetings? Rupert. I'm afraid I can't. Birmingham. Did Michael McKevitt attend any of these IRA Army Council meetings? Rupert. No, I can't recall if he attended any of these meetings, and I can't remember what was discussed. Now, they're supposed to be hinging everything on these supposed IRA command structure meetings that he was at, and now he can't remember who was at it or what was said.
Yeah, and what's important on that, John, is I quote you again from what the prosecution counsel said. At the end of the first day, one of his last submissions to the court was, and I quote from Mr. Birmingham, "This trial turns on the credibility of David Rupert's evidence." So, you know, people shouldn't be under any illusion that Mr. Rupert's evidence is just a part of you know, the evidence against the defendant. It is the core, it is the beginning, the end, and the everything. And given some of what you've read and what I've just told you, you know, it's a disgrace that the trial is still going on, to be perfectly frank with you, you know. I'm actually embarrassed as a citizen of this state that it hasn't been stopped, because it really is getting to be an embarrassment. As I say, I witness reporters who are openly anti-Republican guffawing, laughing and throwing their eyes up to heaven as Rupert gave his evidence, you know. It is the comedy show of the week in Dublin, or was last week, you know, and there's a continuation. So there were other things. One of the first things that was said in the court, the defence stood up and brought up the issue of Mr. Rupert has actually been negotiating a book. John, I don't know whether you're aware of this. He will get 55% of the profit of this book, which is to be ghostwritten, and it's his story of his time working for British intelligence and the FBI. So what people have to be aware of here is Mr. Rupert has a financial, inducement that this trial go against the defendant, because who's going to read a book about, you know, the con artist who gave evidence? And so he needs this case to go his way, as he would see it, to get financial remuneration, even more money. I mean, his greed seems to be insatiable. So that's another thing people should bear in mind. And the defense was only disclosed to defense 3 days before the trial started. And the defence counsel referred to the state playing games with the defence, you know. Why wasn't the defence given this evidence in plenty of time to research it and to verify what these journalists have been told? So that has become a bone of contention as well within the trial.
Also, McKevitt's lawyers have filed motions in Chicago on Wednesday in front of Judge Guzman to get the notes of these three journalists, and they're Adnan Polish, P-O-L-L-A-S-C-H, Robert Herguth, H-E-R-G-U-T-H, and Flynn McRoberts. Two of them work for the Chicago Sun-Times, the other one for the Chicago Tribune, and Strings for Newsweek magazine, and they have been in contract with David Rupert to write a book, and David is certainly given them a lot to write about. Dave, maybe you could tell us how things come up, like stuffing Simtex into a teddy bear was one day, how the USS Cole came into another day, how Iraq contacts were made there, and specifically that you became part of that going to a human rights convention in Geneva, Switzerland, that you were there to make contact with the Iraqi government to get money.
Yeah, it's been another train of the trial that certain buttons are being pushed for the media, and I would feel especially for the media in the States. For example, Rupert claimed he was given a shopping list, and he said on that shopping list was marine magnets, and he explained that this was in relation to the attack on the USS Cole. And you know, I think anyone with even a passing interest in current affairs would know that the attack on the Cole, which I think killed 17 US service people, was carried out by a suicide boat and had nothing to do with marine magnets or anything of the sort. So, but you know, it was an obvious ploy to try and, I suppose, you know, use the feeling and the emotion around, you know, the whole issue of conflict in the States at the moment, to bring it into this trial in a small courtroom in Dublin. And it was bizarre, to be honest, you know. Again, I heard a journalist from the national TV joke outside the court, now they're trying to link him to Al-Qaeda, he said. Now, he didn't say it in his report, I might add, that evening on the national news, but he said it outside the court. Now they're laughing heartily. Now they're trying to link him to Al Qaeda. Rupert claimed that he was in an area called Carlingford, which is a really beautiful area of County Louth, and there's a British frigate right in the middle of it because it borders the border of County Down. And he in court, Rupert claimed that the defendant said to him that, you know, if only they had suicide bombers, they'd take this frigate out, you know, they weren't the exact words, but something to that effect. Again, you know, linking in suicide bombers. And then some bizarre thing about trying to make contact with the Iraqi government, you know. So it's all there. I mean, he's hitting all the, you know, what his, I'm sure, FBI handlers would consider the right buttons to alienate public opinion against Mr. McKevitt.
I think you make a very important point when you say that the media may be laughing outside the courtroom, but that's not what's coming through in their dispatches.
No.
And no one I talk to rules out at all the possibility that McKevitt will be convicted on this absurd evidence.
Well, the history of this court is it's known in Ireland as a court of conviction, not a court of law. I don't know whether your listeners are aware. It's a three judges hear the evidence, and it's on. You know, they have the final decision. There's no jury. There's no, you know. So if they decide that, you know, Mr. McKevitt is going to be convicted, he will be convicted, irrespective of the evidence. And again, we were supposed to have, this was, court was supposed to have been gotten rid of as part of the agreement, the Belfast agreement, but it's still alive and kicking. And it's a very frightening prospect, this directing charge, because it means anyone who dissents from the establishment's politics, all that is needed now is to wheel someone of the caliber of Mr. Rupert into court, say whatever they have to say, and you're looking at life in prison, you know. It really is a frightening prospect on a human rights setting, you know. So people are genuinely worried about it.
Journalists I've talked to about this court, not specifically about this trial, said, look, it's political. They make their decisions not on the facts, not on the evidence, but on the politics. And that is a frightening prospect in this case.
Yeah, and you know, something that has come true too is that, like, Mr. McKevitt is on trial, but I would suggest that there's a definite attempt to kind of cast the net as wide as possible and mention any Irish Republican who is, who's still opposed to British rule in Ireland. Seems to be, a lot of people have been mentioned. One person was mentioned as being a member of the Army Council of this organisation. Mr. Rupert claims to have infiltrated, and yet when he told the court who was present at these meetings, this person wasn't mentioned once. I suppose the question is there to be asked: how can you be a member of something and never attend it? And again, these are inconsistencies that Mr. Rupert has brought to the court. They're not being devised by Republicans to blacken around. These are inconsistencies in his own evidence that he's given to the court. So, one thing I would say, John, that the presence of the observers has been vital. Father Des Wilson from Belfast and Cody have been there, and I personally feel it's made a big difference. The conduct of the court has been different. The defence has had to be listened to, because I believe myself that the judges are very keenly aware that they're being very carefully watched and listened to by human rights observers and legal people in Ireland, and that they won't get away with maybe some of the injustice that they've perpetrated in the past in this court. So, I commend those who have come to observe the trial. I think they've played a very important part. There was one classic piece, by the way. Rupert claimed that within Irish Republicanism there's a hand code, and the code for a bomb is an open hand tilted to the right, as you would go if you were shaking hands with someone. So, each day I went into the court, I wondered, how more bizarre can it get? And it never let me down, I have to say. It got better and better. But again, I feel I have to point out, while it might be amusing, Mr. McKevitt faces a life sentence in jail. And that's no laughing matter for anybody, I think, I would point out that should be borne in mind.
You're listening to Radio Free Erin, and with us on the line is Dave McSweeney. He's covering the trial for WBAI, and we hope to have him on in the morning show coming up. But he brought up about observers. We're hoping to hear from Cody McConey. He hasn't called in yet. But another observer that's over there now will be John McVeigh. He's with the Lawyers Alliance. And if anybody's heading over to Ireland in the next week or two, particularly if you represent an organization, we would hope that you'll call O'Dwyer and Bernstein and ask for Frank Durkin at 212-571-7100. That is 212-571-7100. And watch these three wigged judges. It probably looks something from the 1800s, presiding over court with no jury. Another person that's over there, and he's an American. He's writing for the Irish American News. And he's been on this show once before, Chris Fogarty from Chicago. Chris, you there? Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, Chris.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Chris, of course, for my own interest, you were there a day when my name was brought up, that David Rupert was talking about a meeting that I had with him here in Manhattan. Maybe you can explain, what was he on about that day?
He claims to have been sent back by his handlers, MI5 and FBI, from Ireland to the States in order to try to get commitments from people who would be willing to say that they would send money for arms. And that two groups agreed that they had no problem with that. One said to have responded enthusiastically, but that you, John McDonough, said no.
And you know what, Chris? I can tell you that never happened at the meeting. The discussions I had with Rupert were about money being used for the families of political prisoners. Because I can tell you now, if I was sitting in the restaurant and it was a bar over on 8th Avenue, and I don't want to malign the bar, but had he come to me and just said, listen, I need the money, we're going to buy guns for the real IRA, I would have just walked out of the meeting, because I would have thought, this is bizarre. But he did tell me that the people in Chicago and Boston were backing him, and that he was going to do whatever he wanted with the money. And it seems to be coming true, unfortunately, maybe allegedly, that people did give him money and they did commit criminal acts.
Yeah, that possibility exists, because there's one man who we know to be senile in Chicago, and it was he that Rupert zeroed in on. And I think perhaps you could get that man, who's 80 years of age, to say almost anything. Or agree to almost anything. Besides, he's so deaf, he might not understand the question when he would agree. So seeing that he was Rupert and the FBI and MI5's target in Chicago, it tells us that, they were looking for someone who they could manipulate and claim agreed to things that they would not necessarily agree to.
Yeah, but Chris, it was not only them, and even what you were saying to me and Dave was saying before, there are definitely certain names that are being brought up in this case, and that there are certain names that are not being brought up, that people that have dealt personally with David Rupert throughout this whole fiasco.
Yes, it makes us think that perhaps there are a few more in the States who are with MI5 and the FBI. But one thing we learned in court, that it looks like McKevitt must be the most active person on the face of the earth, because he has direct ties, according to Rupert, with Saddam Hussein, Muammar Gaddafi, the Tamil Tigers, the bombing of the USS Cole, and essentially everything that has harmed the United States.
And
South Africa, also the people in South Africa, but all terrorists, wherever they are.
Dave, I mean, then they were working the Irish angle for things that went on in Ireland to taint everybody with that.
Yes, the whole script was evidently written more cunningly than their earlier crimes against us in Chicago. I think the hand of MI5 is far more apparent here than it was in Chicago. For example, he tries to gain support and being liked by claiming that Ireland is gorgeous, and that the people were very nice, and that at the same time he couldn't resist looking down his nose on the Irish in general, in particular Irish patriots, Irish Republicans. And he referred to a trailer camp in Bundoran as an IRA theme park. And he calls a low rent type of people. The comical thing about all this is that he has lived in a trailer himself much of his life. And his brother lives in a trailer in Florida to this day.
Chris, I want to say some of your writings are up on now McKevittrial.com. That's www.mckevittrial.com. And here is one of your, you wrote down a transcript of Rupert, actually, the first time he's being cross-examined. You're right. At 2 p.m. yesterday, Barrister Harnett began to cross of Rupert. Harnett opened by asking about the basis of Rupert's moral teachings. Rupert replied by mentioning that he had Protestant ethics. Yes. Question, describe them. Answer, not to kill anyone. Question, anything else? Answer, I can't think of anything else. A few sentences later, he remembered, oh, yeah, not to drink alcohol. Harnett nailed Rupert's squalid record from the very beginning of his scam. He scammed his first wife, Tamara Buckley's father, whose friend had gotten Rupert his job selling insurance. Question, why didn't you pay your dentist bill, the shop where you bought your clothes, and the fuel company? Rupert cited his high school business course that included bankruptcy law, and he found that one could legally escape debt by going bankrupt. Question, so you know that you can not go into bankruptcy but every 7 years, and 7 years after your first bankruptcy, you went bankrupt again. How does this square with your moral teachings? Answer, you're trying to impose your Irish moral ethics on American business ethics. Everyone chuckled at this. Question, what did the people of Waddington think of you? That's where he's originally from. I don't know. Question, did the people of Waddington know that the guy driving a maroon Rolls Royce, he asked, how many Rolls Royces are there in Waddington? Rupert, one. And he drove it. Question, and DeLorean said, he also had a DeLorean. It said it was built by a crook and driven by a crook. And he drove this around. He says, do you think it's moral that you could drive a Rolls Royce, but you wouldn't pay your dentist $60? Chris, you want to elaborate on that?
Yes, that went on for quite a while. It was much, much more of the same. This was in the early stages of his career as a con man and a skipper of all debts. But there's much, much more coming. It was absolutely delicious. But to let you know how corrupt the coverage is that a Nicola somebody with the Irish Independent the following day headlined that series of to's and fro's as the Clash of the Titans, where she claims, and the Irish Independent through her claims, that Rupert gave as good as he got. Can you believe that for coverage? So I'm telling the reporters over there, that those with whom I'm speaking, that my interest as a reporter for the Irish American News is to report more on the coverage than the trial itself. because it is the corrupt coverage of, in general, of the by the Irish news media that I find much more interesting for Irish American readers than the trial itself. Though I am reporting on the trial too.
David, I want you to jump in here. What do you think of the coverage now?
John, if I could just make one point before I answer that, on Mr. Rupert's moral teachings, etc. I must say the most shocking piece of theatrics that he came up with for me was he was asked about an accident that one of his companies, the trucks belonged to one of his companies, was involved in. And again, I quote you, he was asked how many people died as a result of this accident. And Rupert said, as I recall, I think three were killed. So he thinks three people were killed. It beggars belief. I know personally if I was involved in a situation where three teenagers had lost their life, I'd remember exactly how many, but he was only able to say, as I recall, I think three were killed. So it just maybe gives an insight into his real moral ethics, you know. I don't think a concern for other people is very high on his agenda.
I want to go to that bastion of truth, the Irish Voice. They have an article this week about the David Rupert trial. I wouldn't even say it's the McKevitt trial. And in one paragraph, and I think this sums it up, this is what Rupert allegedly said, or was recorded. I don't know if it's direct testimony. He said, one of the key contacts was a Derry Republican, Michael Donnelly. But he got the boot from the Continuity IRA after making a major show of arms at the annual Michael Flannery dinner fundraiser event in the United States. Now, I've talked with Mickey. He's never been to New York. We had no one showing up. Al was there. I asked Al, did you see anybody with guns at the thing we had at the Astoria Manor in Queens? But the allegations are getting so bizarre. And one of the most bizarre allegations made in the court, I'm going to play a report that was on RTE, and then we're going to go and speak to the person who these allegations were made about.
Back home, the protected witness, David Rupert, has again been giving evidence in the trial of Michael McKevitt, who is accused of membership of an illegal organisation and directing terrorism. Mr. Rupert told the Special Criminal Court that he was handed an envelope containing $10,000 in cash by a prominent Republican, Joe O'Neill, and that he was asked to carry the money from Dublin to Bundoran for him because he didn't want to get stopped at a checkpoint. For more on this now, we're joined by our crime correspondent, Paul Reynolds. Paul, I understand that David Rupert has been giving more details of his intelligence gathering for the FBI this morning. What did he have to say?
Quite dramatic things he had to say, Anne. He told about his time in Ireland in 1996 when he was given $8,500 by the FBI to operate and run the Drow's Bar. The Drow's Bar is a pub in Tullyhan in County Leitrim. It's attached to a caravan park, and David Rupert ran both the caravan park and the pub. He said a number of Republicans stayed in the caravan park and used to drink in the pub, so it was a social situation, and it enabled him to gather intelligence for his FBI handler. Now, he told a particularly chilling story whereby he said a senior figure in Republican Sinn Féin, Joe O'Neill, came to him and asked him to put aside 10 or 12 beer kegs. He said in Republican circles, when they're talking about shootings and explosives and bombs, they use sign language, they don't mention the words. And he said that when Mr. O'Neill told him to put aside the beer kegs, he showed him an open palm, and he said the open palm was to signify that the beer kegs were to be used for explosive casings. He said he noted down the number, the serial numbers of the beer kegs, and he passed this information on to the Garda, the senior officer in charge of the Garda's Crime and Security Branch, Assistant Commissioner Dermot Cheney.
Welcome back to Radio Free Erin, and the person mentioned that in that is from Republican Sinn Féin from Bundoran County, Donegal, who used to run a pub at that stage, Joe O'Neill, who's been a frequent guest here on Radio Free Erin. Joe, it might be difficult to you speaking to us at this time because you cannot use hand signals. But, Joe, what do you think? Because you were on trial for almost a week there, but you didn't know it.
That is right. Like, I felt like that as regards the state and with the collaboration of the state civil rights as regards Mr. Rupert. He made statements to the fact that he talked about there the 10 bars. I was a publican at that time. I did a very good business, and I had no need to ask anybody for bars.
And Joe,
Hello?
What about the other allegation that you were using sign language when you were going in and speaking to Mr. Rupert?
Well, personally, myself, I never heard of it within the movement of republicanism, and there was other people that were longer dealing with republicanism than me, and they never heard about it. So like, it seems as if he's been coached by his handlers. That's what it looks like to me.
I want to bring in Dave McSweeney right now. Dave, you said you were speaking to a longtime reporter in Dublin, and this was news to him.
Yes, indeed. This is I can't really say much more than what Joe has just said. It was, you know, it's a first. It's a depth of I'd say nonsense that has never been reached in a court before against Irish Republicans, and that's saying something, you know. But sorry to cut across, Joe, but a very serious issue arose on the first on the day that the charges were read out to Mr. McKevitt, and it was a man in the public gallery shouted out, just as Mr. McKevitt had pleaded not guilty to both charges, he shouted out, "What about Oma?" In the court. The court just went on as if nothing had happened until Mr. Hartnett had to very forcefully draw the court's attention to, the, as he said, the deep unfairness of this outburst. But it was quite clear that the judges, and don't forget, in this court, they have the final say, were prepared to allow this. It was a very underhand way of bringing the Oma tragedy into the proceedings, you know, where they hadn't been in it before. And where I know in the local court where I live, if a mobile phone goes off, the judge will threaten to imprison people for disrupting the court. Yet this man was allowed to scream at the top of his voice, and he wasn't removed from the court. So, you know, it really is a lion's den for the defendant. You know, I feel for him at times, to be honest.
Joe, I want to get back. You're not denying that you didn't know Dave Rupert. I mean, we all had meetings with him, and he even said to you in court that you were like his history teacher when he was living there.
Well, I knew Dave Rupert exceptionally well, like, and it's no good me saying I didn't, because I often had meals with him, and I can tell you at Round Bundoran and that on umpteen occasion, and I can tell you I paid for over 90% of them. That's one of the things as well. He used to come into my house. He had his cups of tea in my house and everything like that. He had got, was exceptionally friendly with him. He was looking to buy a pub, he told me a way back, and he was looking to buy a house as well. I'm an auctioneer as well as being a publican at that time, you know.
Joe, at that time, was he passionately interested in Irish republicanism?
Well, he used to talk about the fact that he was an Indian or descendant from his people, like were Canadian Indians and that, and he talked about how badly the American Indians were treated by America, and I related the same thing happening to the Irish people, the way they were treated by the English who occupied our country, you know. And that way we got on as well as regards talking about people that occupies other people's country. Like, according to him, he didn't agree with it. According to me, he didn't agree with it.
Joe, I want to say we received from you a fax from your lawyer stating, "I, Joe O'Neill, am not on trial in the non-jury special criminal court in Green Street in Dublin." And it was sent out to all the media, you denying about taking kegs from Rupert, about using sign language, and about handling money and over to David Rupert. Has any of the press picked up on this?
No, the press has given, the only station that gave us any coverage on it was, they did a live interview with me on Northwest Radio. And that was the only station, and no other paper lifted it or anything like. By the way, it wasn't sent, that was sent out by me personally, that one. My lawyer will be sending out one. No, that one was sent out by me personally, Joe O'Neill, like, you know.
And it's 2:30 here in New York City, and we have three people on the line from Ireland. We have on Joe O'Neill, a Republican Sinn Féin, who's traveling back from a football game in Clonus. We have Dave McSweeney on What part of Ireland are you in, Dave?
I'm living in Drogheda in County Louth, but I'm from Dublin originally, so I was delighted with the results today. It was a great result. I don't know if Joe agrees with me.
No, well, anyway, they deserve the win. That's all I can say. Derry were very bad.
And we have Chris Fogarty from Chicago on. Chris, where are you?
I'm in the town of Ballyhaderry in County Roscommon.
Now, Chris, you've been involved in court cases in America. What do you see the difference between the two courts?
Well, while the perjuries are similar, the same pattern is present, resulting in lurid headlines, it is far more professional. MI5 is lying far more skillfully in the Dublin trial than they did in the Chicago trial. For example, in the Chicago trial, they tried to tie us to surface-to-air missiles, while in the Dublin trial, they're tying Rupert is tying McKevitt to all these lists of terrorists worldwide: Saddam Hussein, Gaddafi, the Tamil Tigers, the USS Cole bombing, everything that bad that's going on in the last decade or so. Somehow Rupert was able to hear McKevitt essentially take credit or admit involvement in it. And by the way, he didn't say that, for example, that McKevitt had direct contact with these people, but that he expected them to come knocking on his door. That is to say that McKevitt is such a world-renowned revolutionary that the Tamil Tigers will come knocking on his door looking for his support and involvement.
Yeah, David, one last word before we go. We're going to cover another subject, censorship by the Andy Town News, Irish Echo, and the Irish Voice.
Hello, John?
Yeah, go ahead. Any final words, David?
Yeah, that is something that people really need to be on the ball about in the States. Anthony McIntyre is a tireless Irish Republican and a man I have the utmost respect for. He runs a website called The Blanket, which is really one of the few places in Ireland, which is sad to say, where you can get a non-censored Irish Republican view. But anyone's opinion is allowed on that as long as they will sign their name to it. And then Anthony has had his house picketed by provisional Sinn Féin members. He's been threatened physically. He has now faced legal challenges from the Andersonstown News due to an article he wrote on the Freddie Scappaticci affair. But they are now using the methods that the Brits have used over the decades to try and silence Irish Republicans. But like Anthony, spent 18 years as a volunteer in jail, and I think it'll take a lot more than Martine and Weller to cow him, you know. But people should really give him their support, because he's a very brave, brave man, you know.
All right, Dave, I want to tell you, we'll be having you on the morning show during the week here at WBAI as we get updates on the cross-examination of American spy, FBI agent, MI5 agent, David Rupert. Thanks for coming on, Dave.
Thank you, John.
And Chris, any final words?
Yes, I'd like Mary to get, she has a few vignettes here also. I'd just like to mention that FBI agent Buckley evidently had to have us thrown out, because the Gardaí tried twice, and upon their second attempt, which failed, they went up and reported to him in the balcony.
Okay, just put Mary quickly on for a minute. And this is the wife of Chris Fogarty, Mary Fogarty, who works out of Chicago. Hello, Mary.
Hello, John.
Yeah, what's your insights into this court case?
It's an experience. Mr. Hartnett is doing a tremendous job. Mind you, he's got an enormous amount of opportunity to discredit Rupert.
Yeah, and that's the lawyer for Michael McKevitt.
That is one of Michael McKevitt's lawyers. Rupert originally said his Protestant ethics allowed him to assist Buckley. Now, this is the same Buckley who arrested us and who committed perjury and of whom we spoke on your show a couple of years ago. So when it came time to cross-examine Mr. Rupert, Mr. Hartnett went into in-depth his Protestant ethics, and he talked about, well, doesn't it, how about the bills you owed? Did you pay those back? Well, no, never had enough excess money. You couldn't pay back $60, he says, because you never had enough excess money. Rupert says no, and he says, what would the people of Waddington think of you? That's Waddington, where he went to school. He says, I don't know. He says, I don't know if they'd know me. So Mr. Hartnett says, you mean they wouldn't know the guy who drove the maroon Rolls Royce? At which time Rupert says, you're equating Irish ethics with American business law. Now, that's a bit of a swipe at American business law. Rupert's entire position is that it is perfectly legal and ethical and moral to file bankruptcy as long and as often as you can.
Yeah, well, that,
to get out of your debt.
Yeah, well,
Mayor, that's what he did.
Because what's going on now is the O.J. case out in Dublin. As I said, in this country, you probably wouldn't get on the Sci-Fi Channel or Comedy Central. But, Mary, we'll be talking to you during the week and maybe next Saturday.
Yes, we are making plans to stay a few more weeks. Hang on, Chris, I'll say something, another word to you.
I just want to say that we know of so many more perjuries that are proven from within previous transcripts that it's going to be quite delicious as it all works out.
Well, I hope you serve it up to the WBAI audience next Saturday. We have to get going, Chris.
Very good.
All right, I'll talk to you during the week. This is Radio Free Aaron, and we're discussing a trial of which producer at WBAI was mentioned about having a meeting on 8th Avenue with, and we'll get more into that maybe next week. Yes?
John, also, I just went up on the website for the trial. And this is the website is www.mckevittrial.com. That's MckevittRial. And you'll be able to get daily updates of what's going on this next week. So if at night you want to find out what happened during the day, just get up on that website. It's a really, really well done website.
And when we come back, censorship.
What's up, man?
Hey, yo, what's up?
What's going on, yeah? Sick and tired of 5-0 running up on the block, you know what I'm saying? Yo, Snow, they came around looking for you the other day.
Word,
bust it.
In Palmer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go slam. I lick you, boom, boom, damn. Take them on the city, that I'm a stormy, slam, somewhere down the lane. I lick you, boom, boom, damn. In Palmer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go slam. I lick you, boom, boom, damn. Take them on the city, that I'm a stormy, slam, somewhere down the lane. I lick you, boom, boom, damn. He said, I'm a little homie, now they blow down my door. Rain you can part you through my window, so they put me in the back of the car at the station. From that point, I'm a reach my destination, where the destination region out of easy tension. Where I look down my pants, look up my bottom, so informer, you know, say that I'm a snowman, I go glam. I like it, boom, boom, damn. Take them on the city, say that I'm a snowman, stop somewhere down the lane. I like it, boom, boom, damn. Informer, you know, say that I'm a snowman, I go glam. I like it, boom, boom, damn. Take them on the city, say that I'm a snowman, stop somewhere down the lane. Big all them other things that have more power. They find the poem is that they wanna warm. If I wasn't you, the ones that now me call me lover. Love who me calling on the ones that I mean. I'm in love in my heart down to my belly. Yes, and I'm a stomach, I'll be cool and deadly. It's the one MC Shine and the one that is slow. Together we all have them, it's a tornado. Informer, you know, say that I'm a stomach, I'm a glam. I like you, boom, boom, damn. Take them on the city, then I'm a stomach, start somewhere down the lane. I like you, boom, boom, damn. Informer, you know, say that I'm a stomach, I'm a glam. I like you, boom, boom, damn. Take them on the city, then I'm a stomach, start somewhere down the lane.
Welcome back to Radio Free Aaron, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.